Hello Yvonne, thank you for jumping on Backend Series by Gerald Black. It's really a pleasure to have you here today. Trust you're having a wonderful day.
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for inviting me to this.
Awesome. This has been really anticipated. We've rescheduled several times, but I'm really excited to have you here today. And for the benefit of all those who don't know who Yvonne is, can you go ahead and just introduce yourself?
My name is Yvonne Obike. I'm in the tech space. Previously, I've been in the health space, education, now the fintech space, specifically payment platforms and, in the payment section. I'm just a woman trying to make it in this life, pretty much.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit about your background, right? I mean, I'm curious to know how you got into the tech space, right? That would really help.
Okay, cool. So to be honest, okay, so I used to live in England for a long time, and with my health background, so I'm a very let's say more like a health research medical on the medical side of things, pharmacology and drug development. That's my previous degrees. We've used, of course, living outside Nigeria, you use technology to do a lot of things, answer a lot of questions. It's not hard, right, when it comes to the technology to provide solutions to patients and different things. And then, of course, I wanted to move back to Nigeria because I wanted to really focus on the problems Africans are solving, or sorry, the problems Africans are going through, right? So, technology was just one way, or the ultimate way, to be honest. Because when I thought about it, you're in the health sector, you're trying to do like some sort of diagnosis, you need technology. You're in education, you want to, learn online or do something, you also need technology. You want to pay for an item either abroad or anywhere, you still need technology. So if we think about it, technology is really the underlying layer for everything that we do, to be honest, as a society. So we only really just make sense. Now, why did I move into tech? I think it's because I have I'm passionate about social development. So it just sort of made sense, right? Especially my previous job at Bank of Industry before Payday, where I was working in the underserved, underbanked sector of financial inclusion. So yeah, that just made sense, to be honest. And yeah, I just always been passionate about technology. I'm very, very curious. I didn't start off here, but I've landed here. I've done courses and other things, and I've worked, and it's where I am now, and I'm definitely happy to sort of be in this way.
So I know you studied pharmacy, right? I'm just curious, why pharmacy? Why did you choose pharmacy?
I studied pharmacology, not pharmacy, right? And pharmacology is pretty much the action of the study of drugs, or so how the drugs move in your body, from when you take it, from when it's absorbed by your bloodstream, what's when it's passed on and then distributed to the different
Oh, man.
organs. I would say I've just never really liked direct things. Pharmacy is pretty much prescribing medication. And then pharmacology is how the drug behaves in your body. So I was really curious about that. My parents wanted me to become a doctor, and it just seemed like the natural path, to be honest. Wanted me to do pharmacy, but I was like, no, I want to do pharmacology. And she just couldn't really understand, this girl, what is the pharmacy? You can get a job easily. If you do pharmacology, it's research, right? You're sort of making up the drugs in the lab, like it's pretty much the laboratory route. So I wanted to go through the laboratory route. I'd always wanted to be sort of behind the scenes, building, solving, not necessarily the commercial person as would, right? Although, I mean, as part of the course, you learn about pharmacy, which is pretty much, the overall title. But pharmacology, you pretty much learn about prescription. You pretty much learn about anatomy, physiology. It's like a pre-med course. So if I wanted to become a doctor, then maybe after like 3 years of pharmacology or pharmacy, then I'll go straight into med school. Or if I did biomedical science, it was still a path to something good. So, but I don't want to become a pharmacist. I just thought, like, where will my life end? I'll just end up. No, I'm not shading pharmacists, right? Well, I just thought, where will my life end? I'll just end up selling, drugs and seeing patients. But I really, really wanted to know what the patients were going through. I really wanted to have interactions with people, not just you know, facing the patient. Yes, I wanted to build the drugs. I wanted to cook them in the lab. I wanted to package them from a prescription point. I wanted to really understand what's happening in our human body. And then, you know, that just seemed a lot more interesting to me personally than pharmacy. That's why I went on to do my master's in clinical drug development. So that really, that was in depth with pharmacology, and that just broke down the whole cycle of, you know, medicines and, you know, the difference between capsules, pills, liquids, you know, even the types of liquids as well. Yeah. So that was very interesting for me, and I have no regrets there. I always thought one day I'd have like a lab, you know, an underground lab in my house. Maybe that would happen at some point. So yeah, that's really why I wanted to do pharmacology as opposed to.
Awesome. Thank you. How did you, I'm curious to also know how you got into EdTech, right? Do you want to walk me through that journey, your EdTech journey?
Okay. Awesome. So my EdTech journey was pretty much like a no-brainer, to be honest. Because while I was in England, I also did some teaching. So it just sort of like, you know, made sense. I think, so I started a blog actually when I was younger. I called the Woman Health Education. The call was something funny, right? So I started a blog that I used to write about like women issues, both more from a health perspective, and then I used to write about education as well. So these were the three core things I was very, very passionate about: women, health, and education. And I wrote things like how long you should keep your toothbrush, how long you should keep your sponge, you know, like the best sort of capsules you could take, you know, like if you want like fast acting medicines, you know, pay close attention to how it's absorbed, you know, the formula you're taking. So I wrote a lot about, you know, those sort of things. And education, I think that's pretty much a no-brainer. But in terms of education for tech, this happened when I think 2018, I started working at Metro Garden Group in Ikeja. And I think a lot of people know about BDG. BDG is an awesome place. It's almost like a tech hub. I mean, they've existed before all the fintechs exist now. They've been doing most of the things fintechs are doing right now way back. It's almost as if, you know, like everybody's sort of like picking up. But in terms of like a proper hub, I think Metro Garden Group was it. So Metro Garden Group is pretty much, I would say it's like a hub that curates young clients and very smart people. You bring them together and then you create businesses. So we had like an aviation sector, we had an education sector, we had a payment sector, we had a social development arm. You know, we had so many things. And then we had like, each arm had like, let's say like a chief exec that led that, or a chief operations person that led that. And then you had like, you know, four teams underneath. So it was pretty much a no-brainer. So I joined VGG and I landed in the EdTech space, which was very, very exciting. And pretty much what we did was build out learning solutions for institutions like Ahmadu Bello, maybe a Babcock. So what you have, your distance learning platforms, right? So what we wanted to do predominantly was elevate a lot of tertiary institutions to the distance learning side of things so that they can also make more money. So what we're saying is, so for example, go to an institution like, let's say, Ahmadu Bello or a company that will say, do you have a distance learning, you know, school or department or whatever you like to call it. Half the time, they actually have this thing. It's not run properly. You know, they're not even making a lot of money. And of course, students are, you know, they're still going to upload their courses, right? If you think about it, and this was pre-COVID. So we've done majority of these things in VDG before COVID, and for a lot of companies started picking up to, I'm going to create this, I'm going to create that. So I pretty much worked as a senior operations person, which was pretty much next in line to the CEO, as you would put it then, where I managed an entire team to build out distance learning platforms for institutions pretty much. And then, of course, from the whole, like, you know, building phase, uploading the courses, interacting with stakeholders, figuring out how to do revenue share and doing all of that, having like actual open dates in the office. So yeah, it was very tedious because, that was a way to understand like there's a difference in how an OE behaves in terms of, you know, how they see education is different to how like private institutions behave, right? And it was very good for the universities because it was able to allow them to make more money from a revenue standpoint. So if you're a teacher, then you teach your courses physically in the school. You can also, you know, attend your lectures online as well. So that way you can make more money. So you have your online classes and you have your physical classes. It just takes a lot more time and a lot more dedication, because I mean, think about it, you're marking papers when people like submit physical, you know, essays to you. And then for the virtual classes, you're also receiving them by email and so sort of downloaded habits. So like, so it was tedious for the teachers, I would say, but it was really beneficial to the students, because we were able to craft out different types of NBAs, right? So I know with, I think as OAU, I think at that time we offered like the school offered the regular MBA, but with the distance learning platform, the school was able to offer like an executive MBA or, you know, something like that, just so that people can analysis and then, you know, an executive for people that were actually working, right? So if you're not in a full-time job, I think you can do the full MBA, but if you have a job and you're, you know, doing other things with your life, you can actually take your time like pace yourself and do the executive MBA online. So that was the whole point, which is allowing Africans have access to education anywhere. Really, you don't have to be on campus to learn. So that was the problem we were solving at that time.
That's awesome. That's really awesome, right? I'm also interested in, you know, because of course I know you are also the co-founder of Payday, right? So my next question will be around your interest in payment, right? Financial services, you know. So at what point did you realize that was the space you wanted to play in, right? What moved you? What was the passion behind you playing in that space?
So I would say a few points, but when you really think about it, in this life, we're moved by money and the ability to access money and pay for certain things. Like if you want to go on holiday, you buy your ticket online, right? That is going through a payment gateway. If you want to go to a restaurant, you're paying for something. So I think like when you wake up in the morning, you're constantly paying for something. So there's a lot of online payment, right? As opposed to offline payments, but there are online and offline payments. But if you think about it, what do you do every day? What do 100, maybe 50% of the society, what do? Everybody's paying for something, right? You sort of need to pay. Money is an important tool. So you need to pay for things to have access to things. So even if you're building a school, you still need to have some sort of payment system embedded in that institution. Even if you're, you know, building a house, you still need to have some sort of payment system embedded that you can move money from one place to another place to buy your tools and your, you know, the things you need to build the house. So of course, by going back to my interest in health, going back to my interest in education, especially building the EdTech platform, it's payments, right? I mean, it's a no-brainer. So even if I wanted to produce a drug right now, I will still need a payment platform to process certain things, right? So first of all, I need to pay to maybe get my lab equipment. I also need to pay to send it off when it's gone. I also need to pay, you know, I also need to create some sort of payment gateway to allow people pay for this drug so I can receive them, they can receive it. You know, so vice versa. So I was thinking I like solving problems. In the health space, even if I wanted to do anything, I would still need to have a good understanding of payment. In the education system or in the education sector, I wanted to do something, I would still need to have a good understanding of payments. So payment platform was just the next thing, right? So just sort of put my, you know, experiences under like a very, very solid umbrella. And when it comes to Payday at that time, when I joined in 2022, was solving a problem. I'm watching that problem in Nigeria at the moment, because a lot of us couldn't use or could no longer use our cards to pay for a lot of things, right? Especially if you're working, you can't use your card to, you know, pay for an Udemy course. Before, I could use my Access Naira card to pay for an Udemy course online. I would just do the conversion. I'll just see the figure on my phone. I don't really need to worry about, oh my God, I need a dollar card, right? I never really thought about it. And then, of course, living in England and then moving to Nigeria, I just wonder why are things a bit, you know, why is it difficult? Why are we not moving as forward as everybody else? right? So, of course, payday came about to solve that problem from a cross-border payment point of view, right? Providing virtual cards and wallets to people so that you can have access to the same things you typically enjoy, right? If you like shopping online, the card will do that for you. If you want to pay for your school fees, the card will do that for you. And you can do that easily in one sitting. You don't need to go to a bank and queue or anything. You can easily just fund your card, fund your wallet to Naira, do the conversion, agree to the rates, and make the payment. And I thought that was some very good solution at that time, of course, because I know things are changing in Nigeria now. So we really, really wanted to capture that market and let people know that this is a solution that works and it's much needed right now because there's obviously a gap in that market. So that's why payday pretty much, I said payday pretty much.
I'm also interested to know what's coming next. I mean, you've worked in health, worked in the bank, you've done edtech rather, and now you just exited payday as a co-founder, which is payment and working in the financial space. What should we expect next?
I mean, I would say So be honest, I'm really, really trying to I sort of know what's next, don't get me wrong. So I would say I don't really have the what is next. I sort of have a line of sight for the future, right? Because in terms of understanding how merchant banking works, I understand that. In terms of understanding how retail banking works, I understand that. And I'm passionate about social development courses, being able to do things that create jobs and wealth for people. Also, I understand the underserved market and the underbanked market as well. So for me, I'm just trying to, sort of think of how can I couple all these interesting things I've done and put it in one box and then build something or work somewhere. Right, but of course, I'm a builder, so of course, I'm really building something. I think that's obviously no green. But in terms of, what next, where do I see myself in the next few years? I would stay definitely in the financial sector, for sure. Definitely in the financial sector, in a place where I can most likely, I wouldn't have to worry about building payment solutions because those exist already and we have built it. I will be more worried about sectors like health and education and financial inclusion. How can we build programs and things for people that need it? How can we expand what we have already for our environment, for our society? Payment for me is just an added bonus where, before I really, really, when you try to build something, you need to be sure there's access, of course, for money to move back and forth, right? So once that's sorted, which it has been, not thinking about the bigger picture, right? What actual problems or what sectors do we need to improve on? So that is sort of how I think as a whole. I have a very umbrella sort of thinking when it comes to, what next, right? So we'll see how it goes. But I'm hopeful, fingers crossed, you guys. Eventually, I guess they won't eventually. I don't think they'll be in secret.
I can't wait, honestly. I'll be anticipating.
Awesome.
Awesome. What do you think? Okay.
No, I'm happy for the future. That's all. Yeah, I'm curious. I'm also a bit excited, but I'm happy for the future. So.
Awesome. Awesome. What do you think has influenced your career the most, right? Now, looking back at all the things you've done, right? I mean, there was that great pivot to tech, but even in tech, you've played in various verticals, right? There must be something that's similar about all these solutions that you've, been trying to offer or contribute to, right? So what do you think across all these verticals and across your career, what has really influenced those decisions the most?
I would say, so I have, there are things that, so in the health space, the things that have actually influenced, I mean, the education space. So I'll start with the health. I'll start with the health space. So when I moved to Nigeria, I'm working for a company called Health Strategy and Debut Foundation. And that was primarily focused on maternal and neonatal health, you know, just improving the lifespan, we went into a lot of hospitals in Nigeria, trying to figure out, you know, data improvement, what is actually going on, right? So I would say, I won't say I had an epiphany, but, you know, like going into one of the hospitals in Animosho, and just seeing how people collect data, right? And this is something I've done previously because I used to work at research or MSF, Doctors Without Borders, right? It's seeing how hard people work in the health space when we don't really have to work that hard in a, you know, like, it could be better. Technology could help. It could actually be better and easier. So this is something I've done in England. You know, data collection is easy. It's almost automated. You know, you don't have to sit in a room with so many files around you. These are not manual. And then you call it to Nigeria and then it's manual, right? So for me, I would say one of my light bulb moments came when I went to one of the hospitals. I went to the data side of the hospital. And, you know, everywhere the hospital seems so nice, right? Tech, things are moving forward. But if you go to the data room, it's like one room with, you know, it's a room with maybe one window, one fan, one AC, and so many papers all around and two computers. Just didn't make sense. And this is, if you really think about it, this is like the brain box of the hospital because everybody's file is in this room, right? As is majority of the population that come to that hospital, whether HMO or not, the files are in that room. And you're asking yourself, how is this person? I could just see myself as this that lady at that time, like, this could be me or this me, you know, in our lifetime, right? In a different way. Would never. Calling to say, you know, just I'm looking at paper dust, right? And we're dealing with, you know, like it just didn't make sense because you're thinking, okay, so you come into the hospital for an emergency. What's the first thing? Madam, okay, are you a member? Do you have a file here, right? And then it's an emergency, right? Or not? And you're like, oh no, or yes, I have. And they go to the back. You give them a card or a paper that has like a code on it, they go to the back. Do you know what they do? They actually like maybe some names. It's not like it takes a long time, but they're efficient because they've been doing this a lot. But it is manual, it's tedious. I don't think you should. But that's what there are other like health companies, like I think Helium Health, trying to improve this data part of the hospital. So they go there, they start checking and then bring like a paper, you know, your file is in a paper. Why? But is there a computer there? Why is your file not online? As the first question, why can't they jump? Why isn't there a directory, right? So when you think about how slow some things are and shouldn't be for people in some sectors of work, you start to think about solving problems automatically. To be honest, if you're a problem solver, you're thinking, this can actually be done better, especially for this person. How can I make their work a lot more efficient? And how do I ensure they're happy to come to work, right? Because you're dealing with life or death here. Right, so you're coming into the hospital. It should be very simple as type in economic key or my date of birth, and then just pull up my file, and then just email my file to my doctor and wait to see, and then that's it. But they shouldn't be. It shouldn't be a manual process. It shouldn't be like a paper thing or anything. So that's one.
Yeah.
In the education bits, one of my, you know, stints back home while I'm coming, you know, flying back and forth, I did a semi lecture on malaria diagnosis at University of Port Harcourt, where I was speaking to a law professor. And, you know, I just thought from the education bits, you know, and this was my tropical disease era. I would say a lot, right? But one thing I know is, in England, outside country, they teach you a lot of, you know, not African diseases. You learn a lot about, you know, learn a lot about the things people in Africa are actually suffering from, right? It's when you actually come back here, you actually like understand, okay, so these are the things that are actually going on here, my people. For education, I would say when I did that presentation, And I spoke about malaria diagnosis, and I spoke about all the things that we're doing now, all the technology available for that, the different types of parasite strains. I just thought, okay, so why isn't why don't they know as much as I do, even though they're professors, right? Why is what I'm saying sounding novel, you know, or like we shouldn't be, right? But again, a lot of things are done manually in a lot of places. So yeah, I mean, I hope I've answered that question. I think there's a lot to state there. I don't think there's one answer that fits everything. But these are just little things that have happened to me in my life that have sort of inspired me.
What is that one mistake, you know, that you have made in your career that you feel like if you had the opportunity to go way back in time, you would avoid that mistake? And this is to help, you know, listeners out there who are curious. Because again, right, one of the core pillars of back-end is to provide insights from experiences. Mistakes are a part of experiences, right? So what is that one mistake you would say that you have made that, you know, if you could go back in time, you wouldn't make that same mistake or make that decision?
So should this, I made a lot of mistakes. But this mistake, this particular one, professional, personal, what sort of mistake? Is it work related? Just give me what sort of mistake are we talking about?
I mean, career related to your career. Yeah, so work related. Yeah. Do you want to tell me about your dating relationship?
Look, mistake. So professional. Let's say professional mistake. I would most likely say it would be error in judgment, or maybe not having like proper foresight into something. So I won't say it's a mistake. It's something I think, and I wish I started earlier, which was speaking to mentors that are similar to me. That sort of have this zigzag approach to career like I do, right? And just trying to understand how did they do it, right? So I won't say it's a mistake. It's just, you know, when you're growing up and you're just moving, like you're just moving forward. You're not really like thinking, okay, you know, like it's not like a core thing for you to say, okay, you know what, I need to speak to XYZ person so that they can give me some advice, or I need to sort of, you know, you might even have these people in your offices already. You might not know, but you're not looking. You're just, okay, next job, next career. I used to make money. We're just moving forward. You're not really thinking about, okay, so there are actual people that have done this before me. It would be nice to contact one or two or talk to people a lot more and just figure out, am I moving in the right direction? Does this thing make sense, right? Does this thing make sense? So that is sort of what I wish I started doing earlier, if I'm being honest, because I've been in so many rooms where people don't really understand my career path, and I've had to sort of like explain and almost defend, and I'm just thinking, but this is normal now. I'm sure there are people like me. So I wish I met more people like me that started off in the health sector and pivoted into business and tech, because I pretty much taught myself business and technology while working, right? So it wasn't as if, I mean, and I think there's some skills you kind of like pick up along the way. And because of my health background and just being a researcher, there are just things that just naturally come to me, like problem solving and just trying to figure out how things work and just build it. Because essentially, as a lab rat, you're pretty much in the lab figuring stuff out yourself, going through a list and just making it work, right? So I just apply the same principle. So if I had someone to speak to, or if I made a stronger attempt to engage people in that sense, to say, hey, this is how my career is going, or how did yours go? You know, I've changed my mind. I don't want to start studying. Is it bad? Is it good? You know, how, like, is it possible? Is it working? Like, what sort of things do you think I need to do? Right? Because, I mean, here now, you're curious about like my paper into pharmacology into like tech. I did this one that, I mean, people always ask me, what, how did this happen? Why? Like, what's going on in that head of yours? But I've always been somebody that enjoys diversity. I don't like being put in a box. And I like people that are not, they're not okay with being put in a box. So, and I think you can do multiple things as well. I don't think you should only do one day, right? So, and I also have a creative side. I enjoy drawing, I enjoy painting. So, I mean, I think I'm just one of those people that, you know, you can sort of say, okay, fine, this is the one. She likes X, she likes Y, you know, and it's not bad, right? So I always enjoy diversity. I always enjoy doing things that are a bit different, out of the box. And I don't really think, you know, before when I started pivoting, people were asking what was going on. And I just thought, yeah, I know it might not make sense to you, but that certainly makes a whole lot of sense to me. Like, if you see how this thing is making sense in my head, it's making sense in my head, right? And it's something I know most people don't know is I started a PhD, actually. So I think that was also like a crucial point in my life, almost like a breaking point in my PhD in malaria and at London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And, you know, I did that for 1 year and my funding flowed through. A lot of, you know, a lot of academic things happened to us in the school at that time. So I just like moved on to, so that's when I was actually able to teach, do a lot of other things. Because as a PhD student, you already know your path, your head is like on it, right? And I think that actually my breaking point, that was like a strong point in my life where I figured, okay, but maybe you're not meant to be in space, or something has happened, which doesn't really happen often, but this thing has happened to you. So I started my PhD in 2013, and I did it for 1 year, and my funding flowed through, but this was mostly from the institution point. And then I just said, okay, you know what? I just started to have a master's and just move on in my life and then just figure out, because they were offering me like a different topic. And I think we do want that. And a lot of these people, I'm like, if I think about something in my head, this is what it is, right? So after my master's, I was really like, yeah, I'm going straight into PhD. I already know, because you kind of already know your path. I mean, and my path was clear, research, right? So I'm, you know, drugs, cancer, and then I was moving into malaria because I knew I wanted to come back to Nigeria. So I wanted to understand all the tropical diseases in Africa. I really want So I read on like, cancer, HIV, those sort of things, diabetes, you know, communicable and non-communicable diseases. I wanted to understand polio, because they were not teaching us in school, actually. It's not there. They're not hounded on African diseases. It's just like a chapter in the textbook. So I really, really wanted my PhD to be around all the things. I used to breed mosquitoes, honestly. So like, there's nothing I haven't really done. Yeah, I used to breed mosquitoes. I used to like, you know, a lot of things I've been this year. So for me, like after that year and the things were short. No, in England, yeah. Because like at the PhD student, so your friends cheer, you have, you go to the lab, you have your own like breeding section, you breed your insects, you go then take samples. Because we're, you know, looking at the parasites, we're looking at their genetics, you know, looking at susceptibility as well. So I know the things, right? So when this happened to me, I was just like, yeah, God, what exactly are you telling me? So I think this was probably my major, it was a shift in the brain. So like, the things you've been thinking of, maybe it's time to start trying to like, figure those things out. Because even while I was in my PhD, I was doing a business course, I was doing a business admin course. So I was one of those like always, okay, so I need this, I need that, I'll learn it. And of course, you know, you can access education easily online, just speak for the courses, you learned it. Nobody needs to tell you that. So I've always sort of known where I was going, but when did that happen? Like PhD flowed through to make it. And my mom still wants me to go back at her, so like, hey, you need to this PhD, I'll finish. So I mean, eventually I probably would. But for now, I am definitely exploring, you know, the highs and the lows of life and just looking. So yeah, I would say a few challenging moments, not necessarily mistakes, a few come to Jesus moments in terms of, okay, I need a mentor since I know my life is jaga-jaga, according to some people, right? In terms of my path, my career path is not straight. I would say I'm the first kid from kids that want to step outside the box. Honestly, if you want to do something different, I'm here for you. I understand that people will sort of like judge you. People will be like, are you not really know you're doing? What are you doing? They'll be confused. I think confused is the word. But within you, if you know that this is your path and this is what you're going to do, this is, you know, like it's clear in your head. So, I mean, what did Burna Boy say? He go explain tire, no evidence. So, I mean,
no evidence.
No, every day, like you keep explaining what literally you keep explaining, no, every day, nothing. But I think speaking to people that have done it before would definitely help. That's why I'm also passionate now about mentoring people. And then, of course, looking for mentors from me. And so I tell all my older friends, like, please, you guys should adopt me. I'm literally like a child to you guys. You know, you guys, my aunties, my mom, you guys have done it. I need to know what is happening so I don't make certain mistakes that I feel like now I'm moving to a crucial part of my life where now I'm trying to like bring all my experiences together to really, really make it make sense. And yeah, I'm at that part to doing it for sure.
All right, thank you so much for that. We're quickly running out of time, right? So I think I can only ask two more questions. One thing I like to find out when having these conversations is, just to get an idea of what part of your childhood prepared you for everything you're doing today, right? Because at the end of the day, I think Steve Jobs calls it connecting the dots, right? When you go back in time, you realize that there are a series of activities, maybe things that your parents did that prepared you for this moment, right? So what would you say were those things that, growing up, you did that actually got you ready for everything that you're currently doing today?
Okay, so I'd be first born. Maybe not really the answer. So I would say leadership, right? I've always been in a position where I've had to lead people, and I've always been in a position where I've had to stand up for people, and I've always been in a position where I've had to create things. So in secondary school, I was a prefect. In university, I created parties, I created groups, I brought people together. At London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, I started the first ever African society where, because I mean, it was a school for international people. We had people from all walks of life, right? And there wasn't like a communal place where people were speaking to each other or were even interacting. I mean, at that point, everybody's busy. So I've always been in positions or environments where I am speaking up, and I am, if they say, okay, so who else to do this? And everybody's quiet, my hand is up, and I'm like, yeah, sure, I can plan for Africa, right? So I would say that planning, that coordination, that ability to not be afraid to speak up and push myself forward for certain things, I would say that is something that has sort of pushed me to where I am today. And, not being afraid to pivot into different circles or different sectors and still feel like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. So I would say my planning, organizer type behavior has really, really helped me a lot. I really like planning. I think now I even try to relax and not plan. In fact, it's now that I don't even ask anybody what's my goal. In my head, I've seen it. I'm just like, God, well, let's not do this planning thing. Just take it easy and just go with the, just go, not go. I can never go with the flow, by the way. I'm not a go with the flow person, but just move one step at a time, right? Now, because it's sort of critical as opposed to already knowing. You know how they say, like, when you're big one job, you really know where you're going. You really know. From just a few question marks, right? A few question marks for me. And I was okay with not really knowing or having the right answers that I asked myself at that time. But yeah, I think just being a planner and being an organizer, and I mean, I think that's sort of what has helped me, just being able to step into the rooms and do the things I've done and not be afraid to like change my pattern, change my path, and still let people know that, yes, I mean, you can be a nurse today and be a mathematician tomorrow. Like, it's fine. Like, it's honestly okay. I don't see how odd. I don't like, I actually don't see how odd it is in my head. It makes sense because there are critical skills you learn as a medical person, research, analytical thinking, problem solving. You can apply it. It's just that there's a stigma of, oh, I've been a doctor. People just assume you don't have the experience. Well, no, that's a lie. You've picked up all the skills actually needed. It's just like, it's like, this skills are applicable everywhere else, right? So why not? You can. You definitely can do. I'm definitely for people that want to try new things and want to pivot into new things and they're just excited about it. I don't think, you know, because you can't keep doing. So my own mantra is you can't keep doing the same things you've been doing all your life. I think it just get boring, right? Like if you started off as a doctor, it's just some lucky people I see, they stay in that career path. But I like to speak to people that have had a zigzag career path, right? I just feel like their life experiences are unique and the challenges they faced, it's really, really unique. And if you don't speak to those people, you won't know that. I mean, it's normal. I don't know what's the rule book of life anyway. Who said you have to do this to become that? I don't think so. I think you can apply it. You can apply yourself in situations, experience, value, what you're bringing to the table and how you're solving the problem. If you can do all these things and you understand the basics, because I mean, come on, if you really think about it, all of us understand the basics of how to run a business. We have, might not have run a business before, but you understand the basics. So there's practical and there's theory, right? Everybody understands the theory. It's just the practical. And when you do something once, several times, you know how to do it. It becomes repetitive. So eventually, you would learn that thing that you don't really know how to do or they are unsure. And of course, for certain positions, like high-level positions, there are certain things you need to have done it. There are certain problems you need to have seen before. But I think if you can apply yourself anywhere, then why not? I will all up for application of knowledge, really. And I don't think, you know, when someone says, oh, you can't do this, I'm like, what do you mean I can't do this? Have you tested me? That's probably always in my response. When you say, oh, I'm not sure you can do this, like, oh, try me. So that's what I always say to you. You've not tried me yet. Like, we've not had, you've not spoken to me yet. So why are you saying you're not sure I can do this? I mean, it feels like a troublemaker approach, but... But I mean, I want the person to feel like, yeah, Neil, and I know you, it's a ceiling, right? I don't think you can do this. I haven't seen you do it. Okay, so before you make that decision, try me. So that's how I like to live my life, really, in terms of my view. And, well, that's me, yeah, so go far.
Awesome. Still staying on that, right? My next question would be, what would be your advice to emerging operators and founders who are looking to disrupt or build something to solve a problem, right? With the way everything is today, looking at where you're coming from and looking at the terrain today, what would you advise that, you know, these emerging founders and operators do different?
Okay. So I would say for operators, I mean, power to us is tough. In operation, you understand the local thing, a lot of moving parts. There's no day that is the same. So I would say generally to founders, to operators, people that want to start companies, I would say figure out the problem, you know, what the problem is. Why does this problem exist today, right? Because I don't think there's anything that's a long-term problem. I think problems change and they morph into different things with time, right? Because you're fixing one thing, another problem is coming out of that thing today. So I would say figure out the problem you want to solve. Figure out the why are you solving this problem in this present time. You know, don't plan for like, this is a problem that you're solving now that will work for the next 20 years. I personally don't think so. Then again, this is me because of my own diverse mind and how I think. I'm solving a problem for now. I'm solving a problem till, you know, once I solve a particular problem, I'm going to move on to other problems to solve. And then which approach am I going to use to solve this problem? Am I going to partner with people? Am I going to build from scratch? Am I just going to copy what already exists in the market? And then, of course, from an operations angle, it's a bit tough because, you know, you're solving the business problems, you're solving the organizational problems, you're also solving the people problems as well. And you have to manage up and down, you have to manage across as well. So I would say, like, for, you know, to be a successful operator, you need to have an open mind. You need to have a different outlook on life in terms of how you approach certain things. I think it would be good if you understand that not one size fits anything. And you need to keep coming up with different solutions, different processes. And very importantly, you need to keep evaluating the processes you have created as an operator or as a founder or as a business person, right? Because one process that you created in 2018 can't still be applicable in 2020, right? It might get outdated. The people then might come and go. Also remember that the people that work here are also very important. They also grow with time as well, right? So if they understand the business and they understand the core of what is going on, you can definitely use them to apply a lot of things in your organization a lot more efficiently and improve productivity. So I think that is sort of like my advice in a nutshell. I know I said a lot of things. I hope it's making sense. It makes sense to me. But yeah, I would say, pick up the problem, figure out why you want to solve this problem, figure out how you want to solve this problem, but don't have that mindset of solving this problem for now. Times for long term, sorry. Yeah, it's just a now thing, I think personally. And the way you solve that, move on to other things. So that's why founders are founders, right? You come, you build something. Once you've done that thing to a maximum level, you're itching and you do something else. You move to something else, right? So, yeah.
Thanks so much, Yvonne, for jumping on Backend Series Podcast. It's really, really appreciated. Finally, we have you here and I'm really excited. Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you so much, Gerald, for, you know, giving me this opportunity and platform to just sleep. I just be myself and, you know, giving everyone an opportunity to see a different side of the world and, you know, what makes me think and how I actually think about things. And looking forward to other things you do as well, Gerald. Very happy with where you are as well. So yeah, I would say the good luck, and you know, it's both ways. We're sharing the good luck. But yeah.
Awesome. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day as well. Hey.